This week, Rachel's on vacation, so we discuss all of the weird and creepy things to see in Pittsburgh. That's next on 90.5 WESA's Social Club. Hello, and welcome to Social Club for the weekend of Friday, August 26th. I'm Sarah Kovash, a digital editor here at WESA, and getting weird with me today is Josh Rollerson, Morning Edition host.
Always weird with me.
Mm-hmm. And we have a special guest today, my web counterpart and esteemed colleague, Megan Harris. How are you?
Hey, Sarah.
Understudy to Rachel Carlson.
Yes, Rachel is out this week, so we thought we'd try something different. And we're going to talk about weird things in Pittsburgh, because we don't know at all what's happening in Pittsburgh without Rachel here.
Yeah, so yes, we thought we would maybe look at some things that you could do anytime that, you know, are not necessarily weekend specific, but that are a little bit out of the ordinary and maybe the kind of thing you might want to bring somebody from out of town to that, you know.
That's true. I feel like I'm always keeping a running list in my head of all the like, cool things I know about in Pittsburgh that I want to impress out of towners when they come to visit and be like, Pittsburgh's cool. We have these things. Let me show you.
Well, should we talk about some of them?
Let's talk about them. Well, one of the things that's kind of easy to do around town is check out the mysterious protractors around the city.
Are you guys familiar? The deal with the protractors?
I still haven't seen any of those.
Seriously?
There's literally one on our dumpster.
I heard that and I haven't seen it yet, so you'll have to show me after the show.
My theory is that it's like a test that or an experiment that somebody has undertaken to see like how committed the city public works or whoever, or I guess caretakers of individual properties are about maintaining properties, because those things are easy to remove. They're just glued on.
Yeah.
Right. But there's one in my neighborhood that's been there for 5 years easily.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know about them until recently, but there's hundreds and hundreds of them throughout the city. Apparently the highest concentration is in Polish Hill.
See, now I'm kind of upset because that means once I see one, I'll never be able to unsee it. I don't know if I need this in my life.
I don't know. I kind of like seeing it. There's one on the 10th Street Bridge I noticed after they were pointed out to me, but they're all around town. So I don't know. From what I could tell, it's unclear who's doing it. There didn't seem to be a clear consensus on the interwebs as to who's actually behind it.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Yeah, good for
who
them.
Is it?
Yeah. So.
But is there some sort of a web resource where somebody's mapped it and you can find
all
the locations?
There is, Josh.
Maybe we should link that.
Go ahead and look on our website, wesa.fm, while I look for it.
I just created some more work for our hardworking digital team.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I don't know, Josh, what do you have?
Oh, I got all kinds of stuff. The one I keep bringing up, like for some reason this keeps coming up on this show, and I still haven't actually been out to check it out.
But I'm always interested by it when you mention it.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating, the Museum of Postnatural History, which I believe is in Garfield, and I think it is a small museum, and it's dedicated to sort of exhibits of the abominations that medical biotech science has wrought upon innocent creatures. I mean,
naturally,
it's not that value laden, but no, it's about genetic engineering, I guess. I know that they have. You heard about like the goats that they use to make spider silk?
I've never heard of this.
So like, you know, spiders produce silk that's incredibly strong and light, right? So somebody figured out a way to produce that material in a goat, and it comes out in its milk that's, and you collect it, and I don't know how they process it, but somehow you get this super strong synthetic or natural synthetic silk out of it. Anyway,
this is exactly the recommendation I would expect from Josh.
Right? And I was like, I remember reading about this years ago when it was a thing, and only recently found out that they have one of the goats, like one of the living goats.
Lives in the museum?
It's alive?
Exhibition. As far as I know, yeah.
Okay, now I'm much more interested in a living goat.
No, to be clear, it's a special goat that they've engineered with spider genes. I don't even know. I just read a thing on the internet. We should probably go there and investigate.
Got bit by the spider.
Come to think of it, this might have just been a weird dream I had. I'm not entirely sure.
I love it.
But no, I think that is one of many fascinating and bizarre and, you know, slightly creepy exhibits they have there.
I have to check this place out because I'm just, like, fascinated by
this. No doubt.
Well, there's also a weird place that I had not even heard of this at all before I looked it up. And maybe a lot of people in Pittsburgh have gone to it. But in Troy Hill, there's a house that's an entire art exhibit. It's called, Megan, you've been there.
Yeah, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation. Someone who's German is better than mine. Le Hut Royale or something like that. It's got, it was bought, I think, in like 2009 or something. It was a vacant house in Pittsburgh. You'd never know it from the outside. It's like a little two-story house, a nice little attic.
Yeah, it just looks like it blends in with the neighborhood.
Right. But if you go inside, the guy who owned it was an art collector, kind of an artist type himself, and he gave someone else free rein, a German artist, to just do whatever he wanted. And it was kind of based on this Japanese style of art where you do the same thing. It's like a kind of an art house project.
Mm-hmm.
So everything in there is like kind of oddly thematic. They used a lot of stuff that was left behind in the house, like old jackets and coats. There's someone's, like, I think it was trigonometry homework that's part of some art installation.
Like a typewriter that people occasionally will just jot things on too.
Probably. There's a lot of little things to notice. I've been there twice, and I, like, every time I go, it's like totally different experience to me because you get your eye cues to different things. The doors on the second floor are really neat because, like, some of them open, some of them don't. It's kind of strange. It's a sort of a choose your own adventure type thing.
Yeah. I was reading an old article either from, I forget if it was Pittsburgh Magazine or the city paper, but somebody went and toured it and then just kind of wrote about the experience. And then they're saying, I just felt like they kept emphasizing, like, if you can open a door, you can. If you can't, do not open it. It was like over and over. And I'm like, okay, what's the, now I want to know what's behind
the
door.
Well, yeah, what's back there?
Yeah. But
probably the electrical system.
Yeah, I know.
Something super boring.
Something lame.
You know, kind of along those lines, there's another house in Swissvale that's kind of similar called Trundle Manor. Have you guys heard of that?
No, I haven't heard of this one.
Mm-mm. So it's like all of your, like, Halloween weirdness kind of dreams, which so appeals to childhood Megan, except it's real stuff. So, like, they specialize in, quote, dead things in jars. There's a lot of old costumes. There's old weaponry, antique medical devices, like, all of the creepy stuff that you love, like, around Halloween, except it's like that all the time. It's super cool.
Oh.
Hold on.
That sounds interesting, but mostly creepy.
So it's, there's a theme here that, like, there's a lot of old houses in Pittsburgh that have weird stuff in them, some of which have been put on display, but it makes me think that there must be much more that we'll never know about and probably that we shouldn't know about. Weird
like
architectural features and things,
now we're hearing about
things buried
Josh's
in basements.
House.
And well, you know. No, actually, I was talking to somebody recently who moved into a house on the north side that had belonged to a famous politician. Like a Pittsburgh Paul in the 20th century, somebody that, like, whose name you would recognize, I guess, if you were around at a certain time, mm-hmm. who had built like a whole club in their basement that had like a full bar with a stripper pole and, you know, tables and, like, you know, and booze, and there would be gatherings at this place. And so when they moved in, they discovered all this and had to, you know, remove it and everything, but they knew whose it was and they knew the purpose that it served. And apparently that was not unusual.
They didn't want the antique stripper pole?
That's
so
what
cool.
I said.
You
it
know,
was like, you kept this, it was a stripper pole, right?
Fun fact, my 7-year-old mother who lives in Cranberry, her house that she lived in before, or her house that she lives in, the woman who owned it before her that she bought it from, owned one of those like striptease exercise studios.
Oh yeah, what happened to that trend? Well, you don't hear about that
there's
anymore.
Still one right around the corner from here.
Seriously?
Well, from the studio. Yeah,
she had a stripper pole middle of the living room, and so in my mom's living room you can see like this one circle on the ceiling that patches up where the stripper pole used to be. And I guess she used to practice all the time with the windows open, and the next door neighbor's husband would take out the trash a lot in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Go boy, gotta go again.
Just an enthusiast of the arts.
So I guess a lot of Pittsburgh homes also had stripper poles in them too.
Well, I mean, it's the place where you're gonna live. You should be able to customize it however you want to.
That's
fair.
Yeah. Why not? Speaking of places filled with lots of weird things, there's also Bicycle Heaven on the north side.
Yes.
Yeah, the north side's kind of a treasure trove of that. There's Bicycle Heaven, which has like thousands and thousands of bicycles from this.
Including Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, this one fella who
Wait,
started...
the Pee Wee bike is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had the Pee Wee bike.
Why didn't you guys tell me this?
This guy has like one of everything and like hundreds of one things, a lot. He's been collecting. He used to like put flyers up all over the neighborhood in Pittsburgh, like especially the north side, but like all over, saying, hey, I'm looking for this, or hey, I have a lot of this, I'm selling this, whatever. But he's been doing it since, I want to say, the early to mid 70s. And people just brought him their junk. And over time, he's collected this huge amount of stuff. And now he's over in the Chateau area of the north side. And he's got this huge space and he's put all of it on display. And I mean, it's just freaking amazing. Like the lights in there, the mirrors that he's got set up. Like it's just a really cool space.
There's kind of like a black light room with a bunch of like neon paint and stuff too.
Yeah, he took a bunch of, I don't know if he did it with a sponge or not, but it looks really cool. A bunch of neon paints with the gears from bicycles.
Hmm. Yeah.
And put that like stamps all over the wall. So it's kind of like a cool like photo room to go along with the space at large. But he has parties and rents it out and does all kinds of fun stuff.
I feel like there's something to be said. I feel like a lot of people collect junk, but there are a few people like him that can take junk and like actually restore it into something really nice, because all the bikes are in like great condition. And like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, like that's the really cool thing about this guy too. He's like also just a bike enthusiast and kind of a bike mechanic. So they have a fully operational shop down there. Usually on the weekends, because it's right off the bike trail, they'll have like food or drinks or whatever and little signs saying, you know, pop on over.
Yeah.
They're pet friendly, which is kind of cool and weird for a place filled with semi-priceless antiques.
I feel like that would be the place you would go and find like a dog riding a bike too. You know, there's some
dogs
I
once walked in there and there was a guy with two cobras around his neck passing them around.
Okay.
So when they say pet friendly, they're not kidding.
He was a patron, or that this was part of the programming?
I
think he's just a fella that had popped on over.
Wow.
He's a snake enthusiast with a bike enthusiast.
You never know what you might encounter. That's amazing.
Well, I say cobra. When I say cobra, I mean a snake that was large enough to scare me. I don't actually know what species snake this was.
Okay. Well,
you could have said like a long worm, and I would have still been like, ugh.
It was a really big worm. So, yeah, not far away on the north side, the other, like, maybe the most, Pittsburgh's most famous collection of random stuff in somebody's property is Randyland, right?
Randyland.
Yeah, all the found art of craziness. It's, like, super colorful. If you've not, well, I mean, almost everyone who's driven by it knows what we're talking about. But if you ever step inside, what you expect from the outside is exactly what you find on the inside.
Yeah. I actually, in reading some stuff about Randyland recently, read that he bought the house, I think, like in the early aughts, and bought it for $5,000 on a credit card.
Well, also look what he did with it too. I mean, he's been totally cool with slapping any old thing up there, making it like pretty to his design, and you know, making it any color. Like when you're not trying to restore it to like Western Avenue sort of, you know, that old style, then you don't have to be quite as particular with what you use in terms of, you know, found objects and materials, that kind of thing.
So no like weird jars of dead things or anything inside?
I mean, I would not presume to know Randy's life. Whatever Randy's into, you go. Randy's also like just a genuinely nice guy, and he loves tour guiding through his own home. I have a friend who had her wedding pictures taken outside there.
That's awesome. That's a really good idea.
She was a born and raised Pittsburgher, and on the north side, so like that was, you know, perfect for her. So
that's awesome.
All right, so outside of the north side, should we move further afield? No, I'm sure we could go on all day. Weird stuff on the north side.
Let's move to another section of Pittsburgh, Josh.
All right. Well, actually, can we move a little bit outside of Pittsburgh?
Let's go all the way.
Let's go to Butler County, shall we?
Okay.
Butler and Evans City, I believe, is the location of, or near Evans City, perhaps, is where they shot Night of the Living Dead back in the day.
That's exciting.
Famous locale. And everybody knows about that one. And a lot of people also know that Dawn of the Dead was shot in Monroeville at the Monroeville Mall, which is not just like a convenient backdrop, but I believe was specifically, you know, the location of the events of the story.
Yes.
Right.
I have not actually seen this movie. It's a great shame of mine.
I said yes very confidently just then to help flip conversation, but I have not seen any Romero movies at all.
I saw it years ago before... You know, before I came to Pittsburgh, so it wouldn't have meant anything.
Yeah, I'm only aware of that because that's what they named the corpse flower at the Phipps Conservatory.
I have seen that.
But there is a small zombie tourism industry in Pittsburgh, I believe, on the strength of those things and some other stuff.
And speaking of weirdness, this is only sort of tangential. There's also the Zombie Makeup Institute, that's not the real name, in Manesson, that is super cool and weird.
Hmm.
I did not know about that.
Yeah, you can go study how to do like professional level, insanely detailed zombie
like
makeup.
Special effects makeup.
In downtown Monessen. And it's so funny and cool. We've gone down there before just to like hang out and watch them as they're leaving because they'll like be in full, like full regalia. Walking through this, like in the shadow of this old steel town where not a lot of people are hanging out. It looks like abandoned.
Seems like it could be really happening.
How would you know?
That'd be a good prank to play on someone who maybe just had dental surgery or something. Well, that's the,
You saw that video,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like if you, I mean, I can't imagine that you end up in Monessen on accident because it's kind of out of the way and it's sort of a its own little destination spot. So if you did just happen to come through and see the zombies walking down the street, just fresh from class, you know, you wouldn't know that or why they're dressed like that. It fills me with joy.
That's such a specific thing to have as an academic program. Not just like stage makeup or, you know, Hollywood effects.
But you know
specifically
what?
Zombie makeup.
I feel like that's got to be a really useful skill right now.
Yeah, I feel like they're capitalizing, you know.
How many times have you thought to yourself, I really wish I could do expert zombie makeup right now?
All the time.
Pretty much like every October 15th to 25th, I think that when I'm trying to think of a Halloween costume.
Yeah.
Now we know for this Halloween.
Okay. Solid tips. Did you guys know there's a Big Mac museum?
I went there last summer.
Really? How was it?
A little disappointing. It is just a McDonald's, basically.
Oh, it's just a McDonald's it's literally, with like some plaques on the wall.
Literally, that's all. I was very
withdrawn.
Excited. No, I don't know that a lot of people realize that, though, because you hear about it and it's kind of like talked about as like the Big Mac Museum and it's kind of like a thing. And we went, kind of on the way back from Ohio Pile because we went camping last summer. We're like, we'll stop by and see it. No, just a straight up McDonald's.
Oh.
It has probably like four different little plexiglass.
But supposedly the Big Mac is one of these apocryphal food products that originated in Pittsburgh, supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. I think it did. Yeah, it did start. I forget exactly when it was created, but that's according to the Big Mac Museum and that McDonald's.
Internet
that's
says
where
yes.
It started. And plaques say yes. And I just want to say that I had a Big Mac there.
How was it?
You can get a fresh Big Mac?
Yeah.
Was it like the original Big Mac from 1965?
I'm not sure either way. It was delightful. Mm. Hit the spot after a weekend of camping.
Yum.
What other foods have?
The banana split, supposedly, is a Pittsburgh thing.
Oh,
have you heard that?
Yeah, I think I have heard that.
I don't know that there's any like tourist destination that's dedicated to the banana split, but maybe there should be.
Maybe all the various ice cream stands throughout the city. Although I feel like I go to a lot of ice cream stands and I don't see a lot of advertising for the banana
split. Do you go to a lot of ice cream stands?
I do. I'm not going to lie, Josh.
Just go
I do.
Stand to stand.
Yeah.
Okay, so this isn't like a place that you can visit, but this actually kind of connects with the stripper pole item from earlier. This is how we
Bring
got into
back.
This conversation
you got my
where I learned
Josh.
About the stripper pole thing. Maybe you guys can tell me. I have heard that there are historically have been and some still are in operation these secret neighborhood drinking clubs where like if you're one of the one of the men, I think they're very 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 male exclusive organizations.
Figures.
There'll be some like unmarked building where you have to know where it is and you have to like be in the club to get in, and they just sit around and drink and tell racist jokes.
And that's like
one of the hidden institutions. This is this is journalistically really irresponsible. I'm just repeating some stuff I've heard. But have you heard any of that?
I have heard. I'm sure there's like really small like neighborhood specific things. But like I know that there's like a downtown drinking club that I think is a little like kind of like step above that.
It's not that complicated to find any of these places. If you want to do some creative Googling, you will absolutely find most of them. I've been to at least five since I moved here, and that was only 3 years ago.
Okay.
Well, a friend of mine in our neighborhood took it upon herself to investigate because she had heard these stories and went to the location that supposedly was where one of these clubs is located. And there's no windows, there's a steel door, and there's a camera. And she hung out all day pounding on the door.
That seems like a really bad idea. Your labor's still with us, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
I'd be scared to go by myself. Wait, did she get in, though?
No, they wouldn't let her in. And then she later heard that, you know, it was invite only and it was exclusively male.
Every one of them like that I've ever been to, with the exception of one, were all extremely co-ed, like normal millennial, like 18 to 45, hanging out, having a good time kind of thing.
I'm talking about like not just your standard illegal bar, unlicensed club or whatever, but like a fraternal organization.
Pittsburgh has a ton of those.
That was like, you know, an institution of neighborhoods back in the old days.
That seems, I don't know much about this, but that seems like.
It seems plausible.
Seems absolutely like it would be a thing. It seems also, based on your description, that I, being a woman, a young woman new to the city, would probably not be invited to any of these. So
all the young men out there listening, good luck finding this.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or if, you know, any of you guys want to be a little more progressive and you happen to listen to Social Club and want to invite us, Megan and I and Josh will be happy to join.
We await your invitation. Can I just say, along the lines of Museum of Post-Natural History, I will say the Carnegie Museum of Natural History deserves a spot on the ranking of like weird, slightly odd destinations in Pittsburgh. Not because it isn't a legitimate cultural treasure, because it really is, but I find the Carnegie Museums fascinating as a monument to just like the lunacy of 19th century rich people. And the fact that like they only had just discovered dinosaurs and blew everyone's mind that these creatures existed. And Andrew Carnegie says to himself, I want, you know, get me all the dinosaurs you can get. And he sends people out to the Southwest and they dig up all these bones and bring them back. And he builds a palace for dead, you know, reptiles from millions of years ago. And that's like his big contribution. I love it. I love to go.
Well, and you know, it's not like we can give Carnegie all the credit for that, too. I mean, what was it, 1999, that we decided to build Dippy the Dinosaur to celebrate the 100th anniversary of us finding the first dinosaur. So there's also, I feel like this one's right up Josh's alley, the Robot Hall of Fame.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
In
the
Science Museum.
Science Center, yeah.
Yeah.
Josh, what's your favorite dinosaur? I mean, not dinosaur. Josh, what's your favorite robot?
Favorite.
Or dinosaur.
I don't know. I like Bender from Futurama. I like Gort from The Day the Earth Stood Still, I think. You know, your R2-D2s.
Mm-hmm.
Your, what's the guy in Lost in Space?
Sarah and I are just shaking
our
heads.
I'm Lost in Space on that one.
There's so many wonderful robots. I love them all. They're all special.
Can't
to me.
Choose.
Sorry.
Do you have a favorite robot?
Me?
Yeah.
I think my favorite robot is probably my toaster.
All right.
I'm a C-3PO fan. He's so polite and friendly.
Which one is he?
He's the gold one.
People have strong feelings about BB-8.
I think BB-8 is adorable.
Who's BB-8?
I would love to have BB-8. From the new Star Wars movie.
I'm not good at this game.
From the new Star Wars
new
movie.
New droid.
The little brown one.
Oh, yeah. He was cute.
Yeah. All right. Well, we settled that.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else, guys?
No. I think just grab your favorite robot and head to one of these weird locations.
Rachel, come back. We miss you.
Sorry, I'm a poor substitute for Rachel.
No, you're
Megan,
not.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
We learned so much.
Pile it on.
All right. See you guys later.
Bye.
Problems with police, prosecutors, and courts dominate the news, and people are asking, is our criminal justice system broken? Maybe, but it's broken in some pretty interesting ways. I'm University of Pittsburgh Law Professor David Harris, host of the Criminal Injustice Podcast. I'll talk with the people who know the system best and hear their best ideas for fixing it. Find Criminal Injustice in iTunes or at WESA.FM.
Pittsburgh.
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 Pittsburgh's NPR news station.
This is 90.5 FM.
WESA Pittsburgh.
Streaming at WESA.FM.